Welcome to Band of Gamers Podcast, episode number 4. My name is Greylock3491, and this week I'm joined again with two of my good friends, Osiris Prime and DBQ Hams. As we start every podcast, let's go around the room, guys, and talk about what we played this week. Prime, since you weren't here last week, let's go ahead and start with you.
All right. It's been a while since I've been on the podcast, so I've played quite a bit. My normal Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, I actually took about a week or two off of that and just started playing again last weekend. They had their, I believe it's the Call of Duty Championship this weekend, so they had a double experience points this weekend, so I was doing that. And then actually a couple weeks ago, I finished the single player on Battlefield 4, which was part of my backlog walkthrough or game through that I've been doing. So then now I've started on Tomb Raider, the Definitive Edition, which that is a really good game. I never played it on the 360, so I kind of figured eventually it was going to come to the one, so I waited and then finally got that. So I've been playing that, and I'm not really sure how far I'm through it right now. Maybe halfway or so. And then also, within the past few weeks, I bought a new game, Dragon Ball Xenoverse, which pretty much the same as the old Dragon Ball games, just like a fighting game. But in between, there's kind of like a hub world, like in Destiny or kind of the other MMO type games, where you can go in and you can either and you can do missions with either like just an AI-controlled player, or you can actually meet up with online people and do the various fights with multiple people, which is kind of cool, which I don't think you've ever been able to do that before, do multi-people fighting on like just like a mission or something. So there's always been, you know, like versus type of fighting, but I don't think they've ever had like you actually go on a mission with somebody and do that fight. So that's pretty cool. The game's pretty nice. I don't know if you guys ever bought any of those games, or even just, you know, watched the anime or anything, but it's a really cool game. That is about it for me. DB, how about you?
Been playing a lot of Diablo 3. You know, I can understand the double XP boost. This past week, actually all week long, that's been 100% buff in Diablo 3 for both XP and gold. Blizzard's been celebrating the one-year anniversary of Reaper of Souls for the PC, the expansion, which then got wrapped into the Ultimate Evil Edition, which came out on actually all four consoles this fall. But the PS4 and the Xbox One version of Diablo 3 has been updated throughout this past fall as well. So, actually, I kind of OD'd on it, I think. I ended up playing on the PC version. You can play for free up until finish the first act or level 13. So I ended up playing three different characters up to level 13. And on the Xbox One version, I had played it back before in the holiday time, back at the end of 2014, and had four different characters started. And so I ended up kind of playing with those and starting a fifth character and kind of just inching my way forward, but, you know, having everybody around maybe level 20 now. So not huge, but taking advantage of the double XP. You know, I think you're right, with Advanced Warfare being double XP, also Battlefield Hardline was double XP this weekend as well, so lots of incentives to drag people in. So I've been playing a lot of that, and I think I'm actually ready to put it back on the shelf. I know people really get into the loop of Diablo 3, and it's a really solid loot loop, you know, as we've talked about, like with Borderlands, and hey, the Handsome Jack collection launched this week, and I heard some good things about it, some frame rate issues, but that might be a patchable thing. Otherwise, that's a lot of game there. But again, it's that same type of loot loop. And, you know, I really get into it. And what I ended up by the end of the week, and I don't know if you guys have played games where you've had this experience, but by the end of the week, I had leveled up a lot, but felt really empty every time that I was done playing. You know, like in Destiny where there's a loop, or, you know, in Call of Duty or Battlefield where Titanfall, where you're, you know, you've got that XP that you're going through. Even in Borderlands, where it's the same time of looking for new weapons and new armor, whether it's a first-person shooter or a third-person, there was more interaction, where I'm navigating the environment a lot more, where in Diablo, you know, it plays out like the old Gauntlet games from old. You know, I remember plunking lots of quarters into Gauntlet and Gauntlet 2 in the arcades. It's a kind of that top-down or three-quarters perspective, but maybe because of that, there's not any more interaction than just kind of wandering through the randomized path. So I think that that's a place where now I'm thinking, okay, I'm going back to other games versus Diablo. And this weekend I have played some of the Fast and the Furious, the Forza Horizon 2, Fast and the Furious. That's out on Xbox One. It came out just maybe Thursday, Friday. It's free for the next 2 weeks, kind of to tie in with the Furious 7, or Fast Furious 7, the movie. And so it plays like Forza Horizon 2, which is a really solid racing game, and I realize that I have played way more Burnout and Need for Speed, and am not used to the realistic handling, or at least as realistic as Forza. So that, and I've been picking up this weekend, I've been playing the wonderful parenting game of trying to keep your son hydrated while he is sick. So, but that meant I was playing a lot on my phone, and Final Fantasy Record Keeper, which is a new free-to-play Final Fantasy game, which lots of sprite-based pixels, but kind of ties in all the 13 different Final Fantasies. And I think I'm getting close to where I either have to grind a whole lot or start to pay. So, like all free-to-play games, there's that wall at some point in time, and trying to figure out how to navigate through that. But I have a want to throw it back at Prime for a minute. How do you like Tomb Raider? I played it on PS3. You know, I maybe got halfway through as well. The first part's really creepy, or it was creepy. But I really enjoyed the gameplay, the traversal, I played Uncharted, and I know, Gray, that you really love the Uncharted games. I really think Tomb Raider ends up being a really solid Uncharted type of game, and I'm excited for it to come out this fall. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I never did play Uncharted because I never had a PS3. But just in general, I'm really enjoying the game. The gameplay is really good. The controls are excellent. The graphics are gorgeous on the one. Like I said, I never played it on the 360. So, but from what I saw on there, it looked like it was pretty nice. The graphic wise, at least. It is kind of creepy at the beginning, and actually the part I'm on now, it kind of dips back into that a little bit. It's not as bad as at the beginning when you're kind of going through that cave, but it's a pretty solid story so far.
Yeah, have you played it, Gray, or what else have you been playing?
Well, I have to admit that I played the game of Increase Your Backlog by succumbing to another Steam sale. So I had, a couple weeks ago, all of the Lara Croft games went on sale. The entire, everything Lara Croft, Tomb Raider, all of them. And I bought that bundle, and so that's in my backlog. But more recently, this week, all the Aliens games went on sale. Matter of fact, Sega had a Super Steam sale, and so I increased my backlog again by buying, I think, the last three Aliens games. So the one that just came out, which was supposed to be pretty good but scary, the one that came out before that, which was supposed to be horrendous, and the one that came out before that, which I actually think I have a hard copy somewhere of, I got all three for $19.95. Not too bad. The next thing I've been playing, I know, I don't know if I'll ever get to play those games, but hey, I got a new achievement. That's right. I got the new achievement this week called Growing the Steam Backlog, so I completed that task, and then played some Destiny. For anybody out there who doesn't have it yet, it is $30. It's a pretty good deal. It was a hard copy, was $30 at Best Buy yesterday. I know it's was $33 at Walmart a couple weeks ago when I got it from my nephew. But what a great game, a lot of replayability. Don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to play it. You know, I'm getting close to ranking my second character up to 31, and I may have to take a break from it until House of Wolves comes out, but it's a great game, great co-op game. I've definitely got my money worth out of it.
I'm sorry, did you run through the first DLC already?
Yes, I did. I did. And actually, yesterday I was up very late playing the Vault of Glass with Bobo, with Jetty, and with some very, very nice people from Dads of Destiny, including Theerbeer, Therbeear. What a great guy. He was awesome. He was very helpful explaining the whole raid. And it was just, actually, it was quite awesome going through the Vault of Glass with two very good friends of mine, Bobo and Jetty. And I don't know, it was hard. We had several people signed up, and then there were illnesses and traffic jams and baseball practices. And I don't know if we'll ever be able to get six guys together again, or if anybody would be willing to try. But if we can, I would love to do it again. It was an absolute blast. The camaraderie was awesome, and I'd love to have Theobear from Dads of Destiny back with us, because he was just awesome. Not only that, after the raid, he helped me and Jetty get the me and Jetty get the oh gee whiz, the weekly on level 30, which was just really hard. But having him along was very helpful. So that was kind of the big thing that I did this weekend. But earlier in the week, I bought Hardline. I did not get it. It's on sale now at Best Buy for only $40. I paid full price, and got it earlier in the week. But you know, it's different. I actually bought the Prima Guide because it's a different shooter. I started the single player. I haven't played the multiplayer yet. But the single player is you are have to be kind of a detective. So you're sneaking around, you're arresting people, you're looking for evidence. I haven't played a game like this in a long time. I can't even remember the last game that I played that was like this. And but it was interesting, new and refreshing, so I figured I'd really get into it and dive in. I just gotta find some time to do that. And the final thing I played this week, just before we jumped on the podcast, my daughter, who used to play Halo all the time when she was a kid, she called me up, and I played Halo with her and her boyfriend, and Halo Master Chief Collection, and it was a blast from the past. I'll tell you, Forge is pretty awesome, and she had made a map with her boyfriend and Forge, and it was just great, just running around playing a unique, brand new map that somebody had created. So
Nice.
that is a
That's
lot of
great.
stuff.
Yeah.
But that's what I played
That
this week.
is. Can I go back to the let me go back to the Destiny piece there, Gray. One, I sure wish I could have been with you guys. Yeah, it's great to go with guys through the raid where you know them, and unfortunately, I was one of the ones dealing with sick people at home. But was that your first time through the Vault of Glass? I know you had done Crota before, right?
Yeah, that was my first time through, and Jetty's first time through as well. Jetty does not have the expansion pass, so this was his very first raid. So for the two of us, it was pretty awesome. And then Bobo hadn't been through in a long time, so it was new to him. You know, having not played it in a while. Now, have you done it on before DBQ?
I've gone through it twice with some guys from the 100.io, which is kind of a matchmaking piece. Great group of guys there too. The reason I wanted to go back to it is the first time I went through the Vault of Glass, I was so refreshed with Destiny. You know, the environments, going through the labyrinth and just dropping through all the caves, the landscape and the way that they've designed those levels. I sure wish that whatever comes next incorporates some of that design. Or, you know, I know people on other podcasts have talked about, you know, like a level 10 or a level 15 mini raid or something to kind of whet people's appetite, because to me, it was just a really exciting experience, and that's why I was kind of hoping to get with you guys to experience it with you as well.
Well, you know, I'd really be up for it if you want to post about a get together for next month, or you know, 6 weeks out. I'd be more than happy to do it again. I'm not very good, but I, you know, I was able to hold my own in certain places, so I'd love to do it again. Prime, have you ever done that raid? Do you have Destiny on the one?
Yes, I do have Destiny. Unfortunately, no, I have never done the raid. I'm only actually level 24, so I can't do that raid yet. I think you have to be at 26, I believe. So I have
Yeah, it's
little
a
experience.
level 26.
Yeah. I've heard though, like when you go into the raids, it's like almost a different game when you're compared to the regular storyline and everything, or the strikes or whatever.
Yeah, for me it was a great experience. the first time I went through it, it took us, it was a group with maybe only two Sherpas, two guys to lead, and a bunch of newbies, and it took us like 4 hours, and it was a great experience, but I really didn't want to go back and try to wade through something for 4 hours again. The second time I went through, a couple months later, it was only like an hour and a half, and that was a good experience. You know, it is a really neat experience, but at the same time, I almost feel like once you've done it a couple times, that excitement or newness kind of wears off, and then it's just another level in Destiny that you're kind of grinding your way through.
Is the DLC raid, is that one just as hard, or is it a little bit easier, a little more forgiving?
Gray, have you done it? I don't have the DLC. I've been kind of holding off and hoping for an Activision money grab in the fall of bundling them all together. So,
yeah, that's a good bet too. They're very different. I think they're very different raids. I think Crowder, unless you don't know some of the secrets to get around some of the areas, I think Crowder can be harder, in my opinion. But I'm such a casual gamer. I'm not playing this every day like a lot of people. So I'm not, I'm just not that good at it. So it's fun. I think Crota is a lot of fun to do with some friends, especially if they know what they're doing. But you really need four or five guys to do it. You know, it's not mandatory six people, but I think four would be the minimum. That you could do it with, and five makes it easier. So I don't know. They just seem so different, very different. And I guess with that, let's move into our next segment, and I'm going to pitch it over to Osiris Prime, because you got a news story you want to talk about.
Yes. So actually, this is from a couple weeks ago. I was going to bring it up last week, but unfortunately, I couldn't make it. So Nintendo is going to start making mobile games. So this is for like cell phones and tablets. Obviously, they have a portable system, but these are going to be phone and tablet type games. And originally, where I saw this was Destructoid, but I mean, you could see it on pretty much every major gaming site. So what they're gonna—they actually have partnered with a company from Japan called DNA, and it's actually spelled DENA. And what they're gonna do is, they're not gonna just—well, according to what they're talking about in the article, they're not just gonna like port over, you know, the old, like say Mario 64, even like their old 8-bit and 16-bit games. They're actually gonna create new experiences for the cell phones and for the tablets. And so they're actually going to create the games, and then DNA is going to kind of work on their server side of things, so like, you know, like the online stuff. And from what I've heard on like another podcast and everything, is DNA's, that's like their specialty. So sounds like Nintendo, you know, picked a good partner. But I just thought it was interesting that, you know, now finally, after probably years now that people have been clamoring for it, they're going to start, you know, actually making, you know, mobile games. And it's interesting that they're not going to just, you know, port their stuff over. They don't, you know, they want to make new experiences. So now I don't know, when they say they're going to make new experiences, if that's going to be, you know, something totally, you know, totally brand new, or if they're just going to, you know, slap Mario or Zelda or something on, you know, a runner type game, you know. So what do you guys think? Do you think this is a good move for Nintendo?
Sorry, I'm staring at a Nintendo Power poster on my wall, and thinking about kind of the history of Nintendo here, and you know, all their adamant statements about not making mobile games. And I think that this is really an interesting. I also have the press release from DNA, the company out of Japan. Their press release, English translation, but they talk about it as a capital alliance. And so what I've read and what I've heard about it is that Nintendo ended up actually buying about 10% of DNA, and DNA maybe bought, I don't have the exact numbers, but the number that I had read was only like 1% of Nintendo, but kind of a capital, an investment on both sides, so that it's not just simply they're, you know, a partner where they're going to give them their IP and let them turn over. But the more I've read about it, it sounds like there is going to be the nuts and bolts of the development will come from DNA, and the kind of ideas and structure and kind of game producer type role is going to come out of Nintendo's side, so that there is some partnership, but DNA who knows mobile games, you know, if, knows a lot of free-to-play stuff. Some of it's, you know, looking at their both their iOS and their Android sites, you know, some of it's clones of other stuff, but, you know, they've also done, they did a Transformers game, they've got Peter Molyneux's Goddess, or it's actually not Peter Molyneux's game anymore, but that's a whole different set of controversy. The Final Fantasy Record Keeper game that I was just playing, that's also a DNA game produced, and so I think it's, for me, it's interesting because it's, they're not trying to do it on their own. You know, they're not trying to kind of wade their way in and be just as sarcastically successful as they have been with friend codes and online chats with WeSpeak and all their other kind of half steps. So this feels like they're going to partner with somebody who kind of knows the market, knows the structure, and hopefully that's a good sign. You know, I think that that's encouraging to me. Have you heard anything about it, Gray, or any thoughts about what games may be exciting to play on a mobile platform?
Well, first of all, thank you both for bringing this up. It's a very interesting story. You know, I can see Nintendo, great company, great games, really struggling. I can definitely see where, if you look to the mobile space and you see games like Angry Birds and Plants vs. Zombies and just as so many games, Candy Crush, all these games are, you know, these are the friendly, family-friendly, you know, cute, enjoyable, funny little games that Nintendo makes, does a great job making on their handheld, the Game Boy, and their console. So it's, I think it makes a lot of sense for Nintendo not just to do strict ports, right? But to get on that. I mean, if you want to expand and start making some money and growing, what a great market that you've locked yourself out of for no reason, right? And it almost makes me think that, you know, anybody who's not on mobile should be on mobile because, the, you know, smartphones and tablets aren't going anywhere. They're here to stay. So, no, I think it's going to be great for Nintendo. I know their stock went way up, but this should be some serious, if they do it right and they look at people who have been successful, this should be a great move for Nintendo. But those are my thoughts. Prime, did you have anything else on it that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I know they say they're not going to do any ports, but they kind of have, like you're saying, they kind of have games kind of built for that already. Like, if you think about it, like Dr. Mario, which is kind of like a, I guess, Tetris-y kind of game. Like WarioWare, if you've ever played any of those kind of, those games, those are like kind of quick games, like just a few seconds, basically. Usually they last. And just kind of other games like that, it just kind of seems natural that they kind of move to that space. And I'm just wondering, I know they say they're not going to port those games, but I wonder if they will eventually, you know, in the future, once they kind of set their, you know, get their feet, you know, wet and kind of learn everything, how everything works, that they might start kind of porting those kind of games over. You know, kind of stuff like Mario 64 and just 3D games, or even the old ones, like, kind of hard to do on there because of the controls. You know, you'd have to have the on-screen controls, which kind of gets in the way, and they have like peripherals that you can, you know, slap on there, but usually you don't want to do that. You just want to use the phone without putting anything extra on it. So I don't know, it'd be interesting to see.
Do you think you'd do like a Mario Kart with you know, being able to turn the phone left and right? I don't know. I mean, there's not a lot of accuracy needed for something like a Mario Kart, so could that be done but just by tilting the phone?
Sonic and Sega All-Star Racing and Sonic Transformed are both on mobile devices, and they do that, and you can do local, you know, versus play against each other, and it works pretty well. You know, it's not nearly super precise, but really it's just about kind of drifting and avoiding stuff, so I think it could be possible.
Yeah, I could see him doing that. I haven't played the Sonic games, but I've played other racing games where, you know, you use those type of controls, and yeah, like DB said, it's not too bad. And I was going to say, there's also, if you've ever been in the arcades lately, which I don't know if there are any arcades in there, you guys, anymore, but they have a Mario game, or Mario Kart game in there too, which is, you know, really, well, I was going to say really casual, but I mean, Mario Kart's kind of casual, you know, in the first place, but, so I can see him, like, porting that kind of game to the mobile eventually, I guess. Which is kind of cool, too, with that game in the arcade, because it actually, before the race, it actually takes a picture of your face and superimposes it onto, like, one of the characters.
Nice.
So, it's kind of neat. So.
Yeah, I want to tie in with what you said, Prime. You know, thinking about some of those games, you know, WarioWare really would be a easy one. Rhythm Heaven, you know, the Rhythm Tengoku games would certainly
fit. Yeah.
Things like Elite Beat Agents could fit, you know, those kind of... And they, you know, they may not port them all over, but I would bet that, you know, the language of their statement says that we're not going to port our existing games. So if they slice up a WarioWare game and give you 10 mini games for free, and for X number of Wario boogers you can, or coins or whatever, unlock additional games, and you know, you can earn those by grinding them, or you know, give us $2 to unlock the next one, or something like that, where it still allows them to stay true to the letter of what they said, but use a lot of their existing kind of game engines, or at least those mechanics, into some of those things. I was also thinking about, you know, a couple years ago, what the asynchronous kind of strategy games like Hero Academy were pretty big. You know, you could do that with Advance Wars or Fire Emblem or something like that. You know, there's lots of different ways to slice up and think about all those IPs. And Gray, I think you brought up a really good point, and you know, I've heard this on a couple other podcasts as well, so I don't want to claim it, but I think you touched on it, is this is where people are playing. You know, my kids played DSs. You know, my son learned how to read and then picked up Phantom Hourglass on a DS. You know, we played Nintendo systems or PCs because that's what was available. You know, nowadays, parents are getting hand-downs of electronic devices, or, you know, the touchscreen interface is probably the first interface that younger kids are playing on. And if Nintendo wants to use this as a way to build their base, or build, you know, those properties, like you were talking about, Gray, that are naturally kind of kid-friendly and have historic tendencies that way, it's maybe a really good hook to get them kind of plunking at it on a mobile device and say, here, you want a more meaty experience, here's Mario in this full-fledged game then, you know, so that it could be a nice kind of cross-promotional piece. Prime, you've been a Nintendo guy. Is this, you know, this really isn't a surprise, right? I mean, this is kind of the writing on the wall with some of Nintendo's struggles.
Yeah, I mean, they had to, you know, go this route eventually. And I know, especially in Japan, where mobile is huge over there, it's like even bigger than it is here. It's just kind of like taking over the gaming culture over there. You can always see they're always, the sales and stuff are, you know, or at least the games obviously over there are like way higher than anything on the consoles. So I think it was just kind of a natural progression that they're gonna go that route. And I don't know, like I said, it'll be interesting to see their, as I said in the article, their unique experiences they're gonna make for these for the mobile. Because that's one thing Nintendo's usually good at, is whatever device they're working on, they tailor make their games, you know, their first party games for that device. So it'll be interesting to see what they come up with.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting to notice in the announcement or the statement where Iwata talks about this partnership, is also that they kind of tip their hand that we're not getting out of the console market, that there is a dedicated gaming system coming. You know, they talk about Next, or, you know, their project, you know, it's their working title, just like Dolphin and Revolution and all the other titles that they've had. But, you know, they're still kind of letting people know that that market still exists for them. But they didn't really say in the press release whether or not it's a home console or a handheld console, or if it's this magical third one that does a little bit of both that people have been speculating about. So I think, you know, it's a wise move, and hopefully we'll see what comes of it. I have a tie-in story, since we're talking about Nintendo. Just at the end of the week, right before the weekend launch, as we're talking about Nintendo making good investments and looking for the future and potentially having some hope in terms of revenue sales because of mobile investments, now they've delayed the a big game that everybody knows about of Zelda Wii U. They're pushing it back. It's not going to come out in 2015. They're not even going to show it at E3. You know, so the question I have for you, Prime, as we're talking about Nintendo pieces, is, so is this a, to me, I don't see how this is a good sign for the health of the Wii U. You know, it's already struggling. People were hoping that Zelda would be a something to hook people in. And to announce that they're working on a new console and then announce that the big game for their current console isn't coming yet, is there an incentive for people to that haven't, if you're not a Mario Kart or a Smash Brothers fan, is there an incentive to pick one up?
I think it's still a pretty good console if you're into their, you know, the first party titles. Obviously, you're not going to have Zelda, and there hasn't been a Metroid, I believe, on this console. I can't remember. Other M, I think, was on the Wii. I don't think it was on the Wii U.
Yeah, so, there hasn't been a Metroid yet. So
maybe I know the original studio, Retro Studios, I believe, is the guys who made not Other M, but the ones before that.
They made Prime.
Prime, yeah. So I don't know what they've been working on. They've kind of, I think they did a Donkey Kong game that's been about it lately. So I don't know.
Yeah, they did Tropical Freeze. They did some levels for Mario Kart 7 on the 3DS. So yeah, they're in theory they could be working on something new.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, there's still some good games though. You got like Bayonetta and like you said, all the first party stuff like the Mario Kart and Super Smash Brothers and what's the other one that just came out? If you're into Monster Hunter, I never played it on the Nintendo consoles, but I did try it once on, I think it was the PSP originally, and it wasn't really for me back then, but I might give it a try again coming up here. Try to give up, I think it's Ultimate, Monster Hunter Ultimate 4, I believe, is the new one that's coming out.
So, I think so, yeah. It just came out last month on the 3DS.
Yeah, so then, and I know a couple other games that are, I think they're going to be kind of recent, like within the next few months, is Splatoon, which is kind of their version of a shooter, like a first-person shooter, and Mario Maker, which is where you can make your own Mario levels. So there's, you know, at least a couple things coming out, at least in the near future, that you can to look forward to. But as far as, like, say, like the holiday season or anything like that, I really haven't heard of anything that's going to be coming out anytime soon, so... I think the one other game I can think of is Xenoblade, I believe it's called. That I think there's a version that just came out for the 3DS, and I believe there's one coming out for the Wii U also. So there's a few things. And just
yeah, Xenoblade Chronicles 3D is coming out in April, beginning at April 10th, I think. But it just released, a lot of the reviews are up on major sites, so there must have been preview copies or... But it's a good month ahead of time that they've... a couple weeks, I guess. But yeah, then there's Xenoblade Chronicles X, or who knows what that title will be once it comes out.
Yeah,
maybe
over right here.
Come out,
right
here. Yeah, it'll be like a Final Fantasy title and have, you know, a sentence afterward. So, Gray, have you... had any other... You said had a couple other stories about other games that are coming out or some news here.
Well, I got a question for you guys. You know, I'm looking at Nintendo and I'm like... Why don't they just release a Wii U 2 and give it the same horsepower that the PlayStation 4 has? And even sell a version that has two gamepads in it for the family that has two kids? Do you know why wouldn't they just do that? Just take the Wii U, increase the horsepower of the processor, the amount of RAM, the storage space, and just so they can, so all the big, you know, the EAs and the Activisions can port all their games over to it easily. I mean, any ideas, any thoughts on that, Prime? Why wouldn't they do that?
It's kind of hard to say. I know with Nintendo, if you kind of look at them over the years, at least at the beginning, they kind of kept up with their competition, like with Sega, when they were going through the Genesis and I guess the Saturn a little bit, but more so in like the 8-bit and 16-bit, they kind of kept up with their competition. But then once they hit that, like N64, GameCube, they were kind of just went off on their own thing. And I don't know, I think for the most part it pretty much works. Now, I don't know if nowadays if we had, a Wii U 2 that was, the same horsepower and everything as the Sony's and Xbox's systems, if they'd be able to compete like that, or at least all three of them would be able to compete like that, because it's basically going to be all the same system, through all three of them. So I think it kind of does them service to try to, go out and do something on their own, trying to be different. Obviously, with the Wii, that worked, but with the Wii U, they kind of stumbled, and that's kind of their pattern. If you look back, the 64 was pretty decent and did pretty well, but then when they kind of hit the GameCube, they kind of stumbled again too with that one. It wasn't, really well received, and the third parties didn't really support it all that much, And then now, or I should say now, but back then the Wii, hit. Obviously, it was a massive hit, and now kind of the Wii U, they're starting to stumble again. So I don't know. I think it's just kind of the pattern with them. They put something really great out, and then they kind of, they flub a little bit here and there, and then they kind of just pick themselves up. And it's a big nostalgia thing, basically. These characters they've created, they're like world famous, basically. I mean, a lot of people might, they'll know who Mario is and might not know who, some of these other characters, like for Sony and Halo, but Mario is pretty well known, I think, across the world, or at least in the major cities. So I think it's basically our characters that are keeping them alive, right, throughout the years.
I
What do
think
you
I
think,
don't have the
DB?
numbers in front of me, but as I think about the GameCube era, not error, maybe it was an error. But the GameCube era, it had a lot of third-party ports. I mean, Prince of Persia. There were there were lots of kind of big-name titles that got GameCube ports, and the GameCube's hardware, it was the processor was better than the PlayStation 2. Not quite at Xbox level. But what held them back in some of those third-party ports were the smaller discs. They were using those mini discs, and the PlayStation 2 and Xbox original were using DVDs. And so in those ports, there was always something that was kind of handcuffed, or there was something, a feature left out, or things like that because of the size of the disc. I think for third parties, the sales of the Wii were so huge, and they looked at their sales of first party games, other than 2K and Carnival games, that there weren't major third parties that sold a whole lot on the Wii. They published a whole lot, but just because people ended up buying it as kind of a niche thing outside of traditional gamers. And now, I don't, I from what I know about the Wii U's hardware, that they probably may not be able to do backwards compatibility if they would try to get up on the same kind of specs and structure. The PS4 and Xbox One are very much kind of PC infrastructure, and Nintendo is traditionally kind of done their own in-house stuff, and this was the first time that Sony had done something that was more accessible versus their cell processors, and how wonderful it was for people to program for the PS3. I think the other piece, Prime, you hit on it too, is these are characters that people knew, and they kind of lived on that. And so maybe going back to that mobile discussion of getting younger gamers back in, that younger gamers who grew up in the GameCube, PS2, Xbox original era don't have the same nostalgia that you and I have, Prime, in terms of Nintendo characters and growing up in the 8-bit and 16-bit era. And so maybe if Nintendo gets out onto mobiles and kind of gets young kids playing with them that way, maybe in 10 years we're talking about a different, Nintendo in a different light.
Yeah, do you think that with the Zelda delay, that they might be doing kind of a Skyward Sword thing with the new system? Maybe they kind of release it on both, assuming they even
You
release
mean
it that year.
yeah, with Twilight Princess, to go back and put them both on?
Or yeah, I'm sorry, Twilight Princess, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think I think your slip was probably correct, that it probably will end up being like a Skyward Sword thing, right? Because the Skyward Sword was finally the thing that justified the Wii in terms of motion controls outside of, for hardcore gamers, right? That, you know, Wii Sports was awesome and easily and accessible, and everybody put a Wiimote in their hands and wished it was a sword, at least in terms of hardcore gamers, or traditional gamers, let's use that term instead. So I think you're probably right, that the Zelda Wii U will be more like a Skyward Sword, which will come at the end of the console life cycle, but be the game that kind of really taps into the potential of the system. You know, hopefully it's not as linear as Skyward Sword, or makes me fall asleep nearly as much as playing the first hour of Skyward Sword did, because I'd love to play a Zelda game where it doesn't spend the first 5 hours giving me instructions about how to herd cattle.
Well, that, always an interesting discussion. I got a couple other things I want to just cover real quick. If anybody out there wants to know what I find interesting, we actually have a casual adult gamers group on Facebook. And so whenever I'm searching the news and I see something interesting, I share it there. And I want to welcome everybody who hears this, or as well as you guys here on the podcast, to feel free to share news articles there too. And a couple I shared this week, one was that the Xbox One in April, supposedly, is finally going to get voice messages, which to me is a couple of years too late. I mean, we should have had this a long time ago. I don't understand. The Xbox One does so many terrific things. Why this wasn't on the punch list for day one? Do you guys hear any scuttlebutt about why this did not come out sooner?
No, I never heard anything about why it was delayed. Yeah, it's kind of weird. It just seems like they left a lot out from the 360 side, or the 360 era, when they jumped over to Xbox One. I don't know if that was just because maybe they had a reverse course, you know, after when they first announced the Xbox One and all that, and they decided not to have it online, or mostly online all the time. So I don't know. It must have just got kind of left on the wayside for a little while. DB, any thoughts?
Yeah, it sounds like there's a couple other things coming in this update as well, like achievements. When the unlock happens, it's going to flip and tell you actually the name of the achievement, so that you don't have to, or what the achievement is, you know, which was on 360 and hasn't been on one, so you're not going to have to launch achievements just to figure out what you just unlocked. So yeah, I think maybe they're catching back up with some of that feature stuff. And whether it was just the different infrastructure on the Xbox One, or the course change and trying to keep to their release schedule, I don't know.
I think it was. It looks, you know, the Xbox One works really good with voice control. They did a great job implementing that. But you know, if you don't have the Kinect, you know, it's kind of clunky getting around and doing things. So I think you're right. I think they're trying to catch up. You know, I did notice, though, that the Games for Gold for April is pretty awesome. Have you guys seen that? There is just some great games. Let me go ahead and pull it up here. I mean, on the Xbox One, we're getting Pool Nation. I don't really know anything about that. But we're also getting Child of Light, and I've heard just a lot of good things about Child of Light. On the Xbox 360, we're getting Gears of War Judgment, Terraria, Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, and Amia 2, The Devil's Cartel. So what do you guys think of these? I mean, it seems like some really good games here for free for people who have gold.
Yeah, I picked up Child of Light back around the holidays. It was on sale for like $7.50, and you know, it's got that UB art engine like Rayman Legends and Rayman Origins, and also Vandal Hearts, which is that World War I kind of story game. Child of Light is a really fun turn-based RPG with a kind of an additional action element, and it's just beautiful graphics. Fun game.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about Child of Light, so that's pretty exciting that that's going to be free, which is really amazing, since I'm not sure when that came out. Was that the end of last year, I believe, if I'm correct? Maybe someone can correct me if I'm wrong. But and then the Pool Nation, I'm assuming that's just like a billiards game, so that's cool. I like plane pool. So that'd be interesting. And then as far as like the 360 side, even though I haven't really played it that much lately, I never did play Judgment, so that'd be cool to have along with Black Flag. So, and I actually already have Terraria, so it should be interesting. Yeah, I think they're really they're picking up things now.
Yeah, a lot of, I mean, with, I think both the PS Plus and Games with Gold, you know, now that the console transition is really starting to happen, they're putting a lot of good games out on kind of the previous gen, you know, both on Games with Gold. Xbox One, or on PlayStation 4 and PS3, looks like their PS Plus games for April are Dishonored is going to be out for PlayStation 3,
nice.
Which is a great stealth kind of game. You know, if people haven't played that, that's an excellent game to pick up. I just mentioned Vandal Hearts, which is kind of the comparison game on the same engine of Child of Light, which is a great kind of emotional World War I story, and that's going to be one of the free games on PS4 this month as well, or month of April.
Yeah, I just got to say thank you, Sony. I'm a big Sony fan. I have a Sony surround sound. I have a Sony TV. I do have a PS3. I decided to get an Xbox One. But from E3 to today, or E3 last year to today, everything Sony has done has made my life as an Xbox One gamer better. They've really stepped it up. It still seems like they give out more and better games with the PlayStation Plus than we get on the Xbox One. But if April's any indication, Microsoft's feeling the heat and really starting to kick it up and catch up with Sony. So thank you, Sony. Big fan here. Thank you for doing the great things you're doing in your gaming side, because it's making Microsoft have to meet you, and it makes my life as an Xbox One gamer better. So thank you, Sony. Guys, I'm looking at the time. We're almost out of time. Do you guys want to add anything else?
I'll add that I'm going to take advantage of the Best Buy Battlefield Hardline sale this week. I ended up picking up the
nice
Deluxe Edition, so, and it got it for under $40. So, you know, if people out there listening are picking up Battlefield and want to get it on the cheap, or were like Gray and jumped the gun a little too fast and paid full price, feel free to jump on to Casual Adult Gamers and look us up. Hopefully we'll be playing quite a bit and looking for a good squad to roll with there.
Yeah, actually, I think I might pick up Hardline maybe within the next week or so. Just today, I won a contest off of one of my subscribers, or one of my followers or friends on Xbox, the Xbox One, and I actually won $15 credit, so I might put that toward Hardline if I don't really see anything else that's worthwhile, so I might pick that up. And I know on the Casual Adult Gamers site, World Voyager was kind of asking if I was going to pick it up, because he needs another somebody to help him out, basically. Because I guess he's kind of getting creamed on Hardline right now in the multiplayer. So not that I'm much better, but hopefully we can help each other out.
Yeah, one of the things
World Voyager sent me a pick this weekend of his kill death ratio. So yeah, he's. He was glad to hear that I was picking it up, and actually, we're going to play this week, so... What were you going to say, Gray?
No, I was just going to say, that's great feedback. Thank you, guys. I was going to say, you know, anybody who's on the fence about it, one of the things that helped me make my decision was IGN. They did what I thought was a very good review, and then I watched some other reviews, but, you know, it looks like a fun game. The you know, I've always wanted to be the good guy, like... You know, we have GTA 5, and you're the bad guy, and you go, I always wanted to be the good guy, to be the cop, so the single player is definitely refreshing from that standpoint. I'm only through the first level, but, you know, when I started playing Battlefield 4, it was the same Battlefield, you know, scenarios, you know, same. Actually, Battlefield 4 is kind of a little broken in the single player, this, you know, people, you know, cars drive through people and things like that, but, you know, the single player seems fresh. And the multiplayer, they say it sounds like a blast. So I look forward to playing with you guys in Hardline as well. So we'll have to find a time to get together.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, Battlefield 4 was pretty much like a Call of Duty single-player campaign. Just kind of, you know, big Hollywood set piece blow up. You know, things going off everywhere. So it was decent, but, you know, it wasn't anything different than you've seen before.
Well, guys, with that, I think we're going to go ahead and close it out. This is Greylock3491 from bandofgamers.net, as well as casualadultgamers.com, signing off for DBQ Hams and Osiris Prime. Thank you for listening, and I hope you all have a great week. Peace.